All right, ladies and gentlemen, here we are. It's hour number two of this weekend's big two-hour get-together on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and of course, Carol Marks, the host of the program, kicking off the hour in conversation with Thomas Fleming. He's a frequent guest on PBS, A&E, and the History Channel, and he's going to talk about his new book with Carol. It's titled A Disease in the Public Mind, A New Understanding of Why We Fought the Civil War, published by DeCapo Press.
Yeah, one of the important points you make is that our history books ignore the fact that the North and South hated each other and it started long before their opposing views on slavery. So what came, really, to make the country after the American Revolution be so unhappy? For instance, how did Northern leaders feel that they had been slighted?
They felt this way when John Adams was defeated for his re-election in 1800 by Thomas Jefferson. And this Adams was New England's voice in the government, and here he didn't get a second term, and that was a blow. And then came another big decision that Jefferson made. He accepted France's offer to buy Louisiana, and the New Englanders felt, no, wait. This huge acquisition, it was all of the United States between the Mississippi and the Rocky Mountains, this is going to make us a minority in the country, and we deserve to be the leaders. We started the American Revolution. On top of that, Carol, came 3 years later the thing that really stunned and infuriated everybody in New England, to prevent getting into a war with England. Jefferson's intentions were good. He didn't want to get into a war with England. He announced there would be an embargo on all trade with England and France, who were locked in a great war at the time. This embargo wiped out all the commerce of New England. There were 40,000 sailors rioting and seething in their ports. And merchants went bankrupt right, left, and center. It was just a tremendous blow. And for the first time, they started to think, these Southerners aren't our friends. We're not really fellow Americans. They don't care what happens to us. And that was the beginning of a dislike of the South, which slowly merged into hatred, especially when they realized that that the South had a moral flaw, the continued growth of slavery.
And, of course, the North was so upset about the economy. Well, the South was upset when it came to their economy, too, because they were so resentful of tariffs on trade.
Yes,
and
that was another irritant. There's no doubt about that. But the thing that really, Carol, that really set the South on its ear was the beginnings of what we call the abolition movement. In 1831... William Lloyd Garrison, a Boston newspaper man, started publishing a newspaper called The Liberator, in which he called for the liberation of all of the South's 4 million slaves immediately. And before this startling announcement, to put it mildly, before this, the South had an unbelievable shock. I call it Thomas Jefferson's nightmare. When Jefferson was president, he authorized the French to invade Santo Domingo, particularly the half of the island that we call Haiti. And the whole thing turned into a disaster. The French army collapsed, and the black army was triumphant, and they were infuriated at every living French person, and they marched their army across the island, and they killed every white man, woman, and child. And this was Thomas Jefferson's nightmare, a race war.
And you know, it wasn't just his.
The public mind of the whole South.
You're right, and it wasn't just his fear of a race war, but it became the fear of a race war throughout the South. And I was amazed to read in your book that there were slave patrols in the South. And what were they all about? And certainly they didn't help anything.
There were slave revolts in the South. In some sense, they were justified, but they were influenced by the Santo Domingo massacre. And so the best known of them, Nat Turner, who exploded, he and his followers exploded in Virginia in 1831, the same year that Mr. Garrison started publishing The Liberator, they took the same approach in their revolt. They just killed every white person they met. And this is the essence of a race war. Whites kill blacks because they're black and vice versa. And it just leads to total disaster, the extirpation of one race or the other. And so this was the incredible fear that lurked all through the South soul during the next 50 years.
And, you know, I was amazed to learn again from your book of some of the myths that the abolitionists put forth. And one said slavery caused the South to be poor and undeveloped.
Yes.
Amazing. And then a second said that slavery oppressed all the blacks in the South. So, really, what was the truth?
Well, the truth about the wealth of the South, they wanted to prove, the abolitionists hated the South so much, they wanted to prove that slavery degraded everything, including their economy. They said the South was poor, their soil was exhausted, and so forth and so forth. It was all absolute baloney. The South was by far the richest section of the country. Of the 10 wealthiest states in the Union, 6 of them were from the South. So that was totally untrue. But the next thing that slavery degraded blacks, there's some truth to that, but there were certain blacks, which I discovered in my research, that certain blacks who had talent, they were gifted people, they were leaders. And in 70% of the farms in the South, the large farms where slaves worked, the boss of the farm was a fellow black. He was an overseer, as they called him. And they were really gifted. When one of these overseers died down in Louisiana, his master is on the record as saying, "I have lost poor Levin. He was the most faithful black that I ever saw. And moreover, he ran this plantation for 3 years, and he did it better than any other white overseer I ever had." So in spite of the oppressions of the slave system, there were talented blacks who were performing really amazingly well. I thought this was important because I think a lot of people thought that slavery degraded blacks, and this had a lot to do with the way blacks were treated after the Civil War. We've lost track of these slaves who really were able to distinguish themselves in spite of the difficulties and oppressions of the system.
There were some of our leaders who really tried to deal with the slavery issue, and I was surprised to learn that Thomas Jefferson, in his first draft of the Declaration, denounced slavery. Of course, it got taken out of the Declaration, but that was quite something.
Oh, yes, yes. He denounced slavery and accused the British of being responsible for, which to some extent was true. 90% of the slaves that came to America were brought in British ships. In fact, the British were making so much money out of the slave trade that the town of Liverpool, which was the headquarters for most of the slave trade ships, they had a black man in chains on their town seal. They didn't think there was anything wrong with slavery. They were just getting rich doing it, you know. But Jefferson realized that, or rather the other members of the Continental Congress realized that we couldn't get too holier than thou about slavery because so many parts of the country, some of the New England ships were carrying slaves from Africa, but also everybody was making money from it. So the Continental Congress took that part of it out. But there's another aspect to Jefferson's attitude towards slavery that I think most people don't realize, Carol, and that is he had a very strong opinion that blacks were not the equal of whites. They were inferior in intelligence and in emotional stability, you might say. This corrupted his passionate detestation of slavery. And it's one of the great tragedies that contributed to the Civil War. He wrote a book called Notes on Virginia, in which he described blacks as inferior and so forth. He didn't intend it to be published around the whole world. He just did it for some friends in France. but they thought the book was so good that they published it in Paris, and then it was translated into English, and the next thing you know, it became the Bible of so many people who wanted to keep slavery in America.
Now, President Lincoln, he never blamed the South for slavery, saying that the Southerners had inherited it. And
yeah.
Do you think, as I kind of believe, that if he'd lived and been able to pursue his policy of forgiveness towards the South and promote a real sense of brotherhood between the North and South, it would have gone a long way to healing the wounds inflicted by the Civil War, which I think to some extent still exists today?
Oh, they do. I have received so many letters since this book came out, Carol, of people telling me, Southerners in particular, saying, I gave a speech in this northern town. This man belongs to a national organization. And he said, and at the end of the speech, one of the people in the audience from this northern town stood up and said, I'm sorry to see the South still has so much influence. I mean, there's still a vivid hostility towards the South and in many parts of the North, and vice versa, unfortunately. And Lincoln, as I say in the book, had the answer to this if he had only lived. And if I may say so, the ending of the book, the last few pages, it's the most, to me personally, the most deeply moving thing I ever wrote. As I wrote these words in those last pages, tears just poured down my face, thinking of all the young men who had died, and Lincoln had suffered too, and yet he saw this hope of reconciling the two sections. And he was telling his wife Mary that this is what he hoped to do. And they were returning from a visit to Virginia. And Mary pointed to the dome of the Capitol in the distance, and she said, enemies? She said, Abraham, you have enemies there, she meant in Congress, that won't let you achieve this peace of reconciliation. They want to punish the South. They want to execute Robert E. Lee for treason. And Lincoln said, enemies, enemies, Mary, we must never use that word again.
That's Thomas Fleming in conversation with Carol Marx. His new book is titled A Disease in the Public Mind, A New Understanding of Why We Fought the Civil War, published by DeCapo Press. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Our senior correspondent Richard Neer joins us right after a few words when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
More than 100 million wild animals are killed each year illegally. Poaching is a major threat to our country's wildlife. I'm Tom Barry. I'm an actor with a desire to preserve living space for wildlife. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust does just that. Works with private landowners to protect wildlife, to preserve natural habitats. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, call 800-729-SAVE. That's 800-729-SAVE or visit wildlifelandtrust.org. Thank you.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here is our senior correspondent Richard Neer, who will be joining us the rest of the hour. In conversation now with Mavis Albin. She's the captain of the Celadrin Tigrettes women's basketball team, who will be competing at the National Senior Games going on now.
Boy, you got to tell me how this whole thing started with this senior competition.
Well, good morning to you, Richard. Nice to be on your program. This is called the National Senior Games, and you have to be 50 years of age to join. And when I started playing, you had to be 55. And then a couple of four years later, they lowered it to 50. And I have been playing for 21 years.
That is amazing. Now, what kind of schedule do you have? Do you play every week? Do you play a couple of times a week? What's the schedule like?
No, we have no actual schedule. Every state has their own chapter of the senior games, and a lot of people have not heard about the senior games, and that's what's unfortunate because, you know, the baby boomers are fast becoming the most influential group of all time, and they need something to be involved in. So I encourage you, if you're 50 years old, call your local chapter or call the National Senior Games in Baton Rouge. Get involved. It absolutely changed our lives, and it's absolutely the greatest thing a retiree could be involved in.
Now, do you have regular practices? Do you have a traveling team? How does this work? Sketch out for us how it works.
Yes. We practice twice a week at the YMCA, and there are tournaments in every state. We seldom ever play in Louisiana. I'm from Louisiana, as you can guess, I'm sure, by my accent. And we travel to different states when they put their state tournaments on. And you have to qualify first, second, third to go to the national tournament. And we will be traveling to the national tournament in July, which is next month, in Cleveland, Ohio, and that is the premier of all the tournaments. And we have won 7 national gold medals, and we're going for our number 8, hopefully.
Well, when you have a record of 198-5, I have to ask you not to accentuate the negative, but who beat you in those 5 losses? How did that happen?
Well, I think we just wasn't in the shape that we needed to be in, and we just didn't play to our potential. We absolutely didn't. But the teams that have beat us, we have come back and beaten them since. So we feel pretty good about our record, Richard. No other team in the National Senior Games have a record such as us. And we're very humbled about that. We just feel like we have been so blessed. And we pray a lot. We take a supplement called Celadrin to alleviate pain and lubricate our joints. And we just want to do everything we can to keep going.
Now, you know, this tournament that you're entering now, are the rules similar to NCAA or NBA rules? Is it a full court? Tell us about what you might expect watching such a game.
Well, first of all, the admittance is free if someone in the Cleveland area would like to come to the senior games. And we do play by the NCAA rules. And we play half court. And it's a very physical game. Whenever you're 76 years old and playing on a basketball court, you come out with broken fingers, black eyes, and blue lips and everything else, you know. But it is physical, but we just absolutely love women's basketball. And we want to promote that and promote healthy living as we age. We can't do anything about aging, but we can do something about how we age.
Now, when you say it's physical, I have pictures in my mind of taking charges and blocks and flopping on the court. I mean, does it get that physical? I mean, do you actually, bump into people and have a lot of contact in this game?
Bump into people? I guess we do. We roll on the floor and everything else. We have a documentary coming out at the last of July. It will be on PBS. And if you see in that documentary, we are featured in it. And the ladies are, it's very physical. You just have to see it to believe it. And some of the people have shown this to other seniors, and they said the next day they had 18 to 20 women come out to try out for basketball. And that's what we want to do. We want to promote physical fitness as we age.
Well, that is absolutely a great ideal now. Are the games 40 minutes, 48 minutes? I mean, how long are the games?
No, they're 2 12-minute halves, and you have 2 timeouts in each half.
And you're the team captain. Do you have coaches? Do you have a staff? How does that work?
We do not have a coach. The women that I play with, some of them were former coaches. That was what they did as their career. And so we played it together enough that we know how each other plays. And it's been successful so far, you know. So if something works, don't change it.
Okay. And I have to ask this. Do you ever have little squabbles? Like, we hear NBA players all the time. Hey, you know, I was open. You didn't get me the ball. Do you ever have that? Or is it pretty much a well-oiled machine when it comes to cooperation?
Oh, we have our little moments out on the ball court, you know. We talk a lot. You know, get back. I've got to get back and move out. And you're not in position. Get in position. We do all that. And we get pretty fierce on the basketball court, but after it's over with, we're dear friends. The amazing thing about my team is that all six of us have played together for 16 years, and when we go to other tournaments and we meet a team that we've played several times, each time they have new players. And I think that's the part about us that sets us aside from everybody else, is that we have the same people. And we're all friends. We all are grandmothers, and we just try to out-talk each other about how wonderful our grandchildren are. and we take care of our bodies, and we're very, very concerned about our appearance, and we have a wonderful sponsor called Celadrin. No other team in the National Senior Games that I know of have a sponsor, and we're very, very happy about that. It's such a great product.
Now, you guys don't trash talk or anything, do you?
We try not to. But one girl, one time, we have a tall player. She's almost 6 feet, and she's very, very well built, an amazing ball player. And she grabbed the ball away from this little lady one time, and the little lady was trying to hold on to it, and she slung it. And she slung her against the court, across the court, you know. And she get up and she said, "If you do that again, I'm going to kill you." And, you know, well, my goodness, that's part of basketball. If you can't take the heat, you got to get out of the kitchen, you know. And it's very physical. It's very physical.
Now, if somebody wants to get involved in senior games on a statewide basis, is there a clearinghouse statewide, nationally? Is there a website? Is there some way they can investigate this further?
Oh, yes, and I encourage them to do that. Every state almost has a great following. We'll have about 13,000 people at this tournament. And they go to, if they'll get online and go to nationalseniorgames.com, it will give you some information there on how to contact the national office. Or if you live in Florida, New York, California, wherever you live, you know, contact somebody and make a concerted effort to get involved. You don't have to play basketball. They have other things. They have volleyball. They have softball. The men's softball games are absolutely amazing and a lot of fun to watch. And so there's something in the National Senior Games for everyone, regardless of what kind of shape you're in.
Mavis Albin, in conversation with Richard Neer. She's the captain of the Celadrin Tigrettes women's basketball team. If you want more information, go to nationalseniorgames.com. Richard Neer returns for more conversation. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and said before this segment of the program, we are talking with Richard Neer, our senior correspondent. Conducted a very interesting and fine conversation with Mavis Albin before of the Celadrin Tigrettes, and we are indeed talking about upper demographic issues, which is our mission on the program. Coming up in just a few moments, Richard will be talking with James Twyman, who is a best-selling author and filmmaker, and I understand he's trying to put 1 million-plus signatures on the desks of Hollywood film decision-makers. What's his goal with that, Richard?
Well, he's trying to get movies made that would appeal to adults instead of superhero movies and explosions and all sorts of mindless comedy. He wants people to make adult movies again. And I sympathize with his cause. However, I point him toward the one area where they do make adult movies, and that's television.
Oh, I was going to say the adult film industry, which I support wholeheartedly.
HBO, Showtime, with shows like Ray Donovan and The Newsroom and The Bridge and shows like that, are aimed at adults, very mature and very good.
Interesting. Well, we look forward to hearing this conversation, and then let's talk on the other side. Coming up next, Richard Neer, in conversation with James Twyman on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, which continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and as promised, here's our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation with James Twyman. He's a New York Times best-selling author and a filmmaker who is seeking to put 1 million-plus signatures on the desks of Hollywood film decision-makers.
Now, do you think with 1 million signatures, they'll pay attention?
Well, I think that they would have to. The Hollywood system for years has been based on the idea that seniors simply don't go see the movies in enough numbers. And that's why I think if you look out, you'll realize that most films today are made for 15-year-old boys. And I've always felt, you know, to take a line from a great movie, build it and they will come. If there are more movies that are made that have mature themes, that the older people, the boomers and the seniors, will actually go out in greater numbers. And this is usually shown in a lot of the films that have been coming out in recent years, like Marigold Hotel or Quartet. But the thing is, none of them have been American. They've all been British films, and there's been one great French film. And I think it's time for the American system to realize that there are millions of people who are being neglected, and if they were to make more films for these people, they would go see them and everyone would be much happier.
Well, I think part of the problem is that a lot of the movies that you cite are what we would consider small movies. They're movies that are almost better enjoyed at home now that people have big screen TVs and sophisticated sound systems. And for them to go out to see a small movie is not as attractive as it once was, whereas the kids, they go to the movies all the time to see these big blockbusters. The big blockbusters make a lot more money, and that's, I guess, why the studios go for them.
Well, I think you're definitely true in a certain extent that it's funny that films that are still, you know, quite big in my mind, you know, being an independent filmmaker and knowing what a small film really is, it's funny that some of these other films that are made for $50 million are considered small films. Mm. But you are right about that. I mean, the studios just aren't interested in films today unless they spend $100 million to $200 million and make a return on that. But the other thing that I think studies have shown is that older people, boomers and seniors, do go to the movies more commonly than younger people. And it's because it's what they're used to. Older people don't tend to be quite as comfortable with streaming devices and things like this. And so when a movie does come out, they will get onto, you know, into a car, they'll drive to the theater for that communal experience, which we've all been raised with. And this is why we've decided to put together this petition, because we figure if we can have 1 million people who say we will go see these movies if they come out, then that means that there are 10 million right behind them who will do the same. And the Hollywood system and the film industry is going to have to pay attention to that. So we really are encouraging everyone to sign this petition, because this is how your voice gets heard, and this is how you can make an impact and make sure that there are more films, you know, whether they're being made for television or for the theater. The point is to just make sure that there are more films that are being made that we can relate to.
Well, I think you hit on it. Made for television. HBO, Showtime, USA Network, AMC, they're all making very good adult movies or adult series, and I think more and more adults are finding that television is more satisfying to them than movies.
I think you're absolutely right. It's a strange world we live in right now. No one really knows what the formula is or what the next step is. But I think even as the cinema does decline in importance or interest, I think it's still going to be an important and viable place just because of that communal aspect. And, you know, this whole thing started for me when a couple of years ago I went and saw the Exotic Marigold Hotel, and I was in a theater, and I had just turned 50 myself, and I looked around, and I was the youngest person in the room, and the theater was pretty packed. And I realized we need to make more films like this. And so along with my friends who are other producers and directors, we started working on a film called Redwood Highway, which will be out in theaters in a few months. It stars Shirley Knight and Thomas Skerritt, and I think it's going to be an important film for this. But then the idea, you know, it really hit me that we need to convince Hollywood that if they were to make more films that will satisfy this generation, that everyone will do well. And so that's why this petition is so important, why we're trying to get so many people to go there. Because when it does, when we finally do reach that million-person mark, we will go to Hollywood, we're going to have a big press conference, we're going to show everyone this, and then, of course, we're going to distribute this survey and this petition to every single studio, every single producer in Hollywood, to show them that, indeed, these people are there and wanting films.
Well, interestingly, in the New York Times this week, there is a story kind of correlating with what you're talking about. And the suggestion is that they do so much market research that a petition or anything else, you know, an outcry from the public really won't matter too much, because they have their own market research. They know what they think their audience should be, and they tend to look at petitions and phone calls and emails as, well, that's just a small segment of the audience. You know, I really have skepticism as to whether they'll listen.
Well, I guess there's one way to find out, and that's to get people to participate. And you know, I think it goes back to that great Margaret Mead quote, never think that a small group of committed people can't change the world, because it's the only thing that has. And maybe having these films made isn't going to change the world, but maybe it will to a certain extent. And I think just getting people involved. And, you know, the other thing is that in Hollywood today, most of the people who are making decisions aren't even really movie people. They're accountants who are very, very young, who are looking at the bottom line. And you're right, they're looking at their own surveys and their own market data. But I just don't think that they're going to be able to completely ignore a million people who sign a petition saying they want more films. So we're hoping that people will simply go to www.seniorcinema.com and sign that petition, and we'll see. I mean, there's only one way to find out, and that's to get this in front of these people. And it may not happen overnight, but if year by year we can have more films that are coming out for this growing audience and have them be financially successful, then that's what's going to change things. Maybe the petition won't do it, but maybe it will start something, and the success of the films themselves, maybe that's what's going to do it. So once again, you know, signing this petition is definitely a step in the right direction.
Well, even Steven Spielberg said that making Lincoln and selling that to a studio was very, very difficult. He said it was one breath away from being on HBO, and here is a major director with obviously a big subject and a mature subject, but something that all ages could relate to, Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
And it did okay at the box office, but given the Academy Award nominations and everything else, it really didn't do, you know, to quote what Variety would say, boffo box office, did it?
Well, Steven Spielberg also said a couple of weeks ago, it may have been that same interview, that he thinks that the Hollywood system as it is right now is about to implode. Because the studios can't continue to make these $200 million movies and then have maybe two or three of them bomb all at around the same time or in order, because that's going to bring down the whole system. And I say maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe the idea that smaller films are not worthy of being in the cinema is something to relook at. Because I think what's missing today are great stories. And this is something else about the older generation, that they were raised on great stories, and they were raised on great films. So it's easier, or harder rather, to fool them with these stories that just don't have the same substance. And this is what they're used to, and I think that if we can give people, we can give this entire generation more great films that they can relate to and have great stories and great actors, then I think, you know, slowly we're going to see this begin to change.
Yeah, I mean, a film like Silver Linings Playbook, for example, I mean, it had young people in it, but it wasn't
right.
A young person's film per se. You know, very well acted, very well respected. That's the type of film that I think could have that universal appeal. But part of the problem is they're trying to hit home runs all the time. You know, nobody in Hollywood, it seems, is I'm not saying nobody, but not too many, are happy with hitting singles, of making a movie that costs $20 million and making $5 million. They want to spend $200 and make $500.
Yeah.
You know, they're not happy with that nice return on their money as opposed to that huge return on their money.
Well, you're absolutely right. And maybe that's why it's going to come from the independent film world. You know, films like Redwood Highway, and, you know, smaller films that have big hearts. And you're right, you know, maybe Redwood Highway and films like that aren't going to make $100 million. I doubt it. But, you know, singles and doubles are good, too. And, you know, you can win a ball game just by hitting singles and doubles. And that's, you know, that's maybe what's going to happen here for a little while. And maybe these home runs, like Spielberg said, maybe a few of them are going to falter and they're going to start to reconsider this. And, you know, the survey, I think, is just one path to get our opinion noticed. And, you know, people going to seniorcinema.com is just going to be one. Oh, and by the way, they can also see that the trailer for Redwood Highway there, it won't be released until probably early in 2014. But if people want to go and see the trailer and sign the survey, that would be the place to do it.
James Twyman, in conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And if you want more information, go to seniorcinema.com. That's seniorcinema.com. Richard Neer returns in just a moment for the final segment of our big two-hour get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We come to the final segment of our big two-hour get-together. And let's continue our conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, interesting, the conversation you just had with James Twyman about whether or not seniors go to the movies. And your opening question was a great question. Will it have any impact if you dump a million-plus signatures on the desks of Hollywood insiders or Hollywood decision makers? And he said to you, of course, my experience is that the only thing that really affects big time corporate decision makers in the commercial media business is box office and ratings. That they don't care about letters, they don't care about emails, they don't care about what they hear people tell them in the street. They don't think it counts. They just care about the bottom line, ratings and revenue. Is that your experience?
I would agree. And I think it's a little stupid, especially in this day and age when we're talking about micro segments of the audience and where you can really make money by focusing, concentrating on a very small audience, but super serving them, as opposed to let's go for the big box office thing, like The Lone Ranger, which is really a bomb of a movie. They tried to, they spent almost $300,000 between building, $300 million between filming it and marketing it, and it bombed. And this idea that you have to go big with a big blockbuster to make money instead of making maybe a smaller movie that you know, fewer people will see, but there'll be a bigger profit margin.
Or that touches upon a provocative topic that doesn't need to be camouflaged by all of that pizzazz and all of that computer-generated hokum. Good stories. There's nothing like a good story.
You know what the problem is, though? It's the foreign market. You know, these movies that we don't like here, with all the explosions and the superheroes, even though some of those are good, the foreign market buys those. But the small movies that you have to, you know, that are part of Americana, that are indigenous to this country, that have plots that don't relate to somebody in England or France, they don't sell overseas. The big blockbusters sell, the ones that are plot-driven with, you know, all kinds of violence. That's what sells overseas.
Well, high concept as opposed to plot.
Yeah,
yeah, they don't
exactly.
really have plots. They have, you know, they're embarrassingly thin when it comes to the plot. Interesting, indeed. So what you're basically saying is not only now do we have this mass market that Hollywood is trying to appeal to in terms of the U.S., but now there's a global mass market that even creates the need for a lower common denominator. And we get the lowest possible common denominator. I know it's funny when you go to the movies. It's not funny. It's actually annoying. As a matter of fact, it's annoying to go to the movies and have to sit there through four or five trailers and commercials. They say the movie starts 7:30, but it really starts at 5 to 8. And you're sitting there for 20 minutes. But you're afraid, you know, every time you're afraid, this is the time they'll start the movie on time. So you always get stuck sitting there, eating all your popcorn, watching trailers and watching commercials. And you can't tell where one trailer begins and the other one ends, or where one ends and when the other begins. They have the same style.
And it's even worse when you rent or buy a Blu-ray and you have those trailers in the Blu-ray and you can't skip them. You know, you hit the jump button and it won't work. You have to sit through trailers of movies you're not interested in before you get to the feature.
That's very frustrating indeed. Well, I'll tell you, thank you very much, Richard. It has been a pleasure talking to you as always. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Beverly Santanello, our producer on the front line, putting it all together. Thank you to Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. And thank you, of course, to Steve Wiseman. On behalf of all of us, thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Join us next weekend for another two-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.